Archer will say, good morning, let's begin. Today's daf is Peches 88. We are picking up Emir Tzashem Pes Zayin on with Beis 87b. Two lines up from the bottom. Ella Abayi bar Avid, Rabbi Hanina bar Avid, Dami Tarbar. So we'll say, Hachma Askinon. Remember again, we left off yesterday with the riveting case of the Mishnah. I send my son to the Chenveni to go ahead and purchase some oil. And what happens? I give him money, again, too much money for the necessary purchase. And he goes ahead and brings back the oil, the flask, the change. And on the way, ultimately goes ahead, loses the change, breaks the flask, loses the oil. So therefore, again, the Gemara says, so we had a machlokes in the Mishnah about who is responsible for that. So again, the Tanakama the Rabbanan said that the Chenveni is chayiv. Rabbi Huda says that the father bears responsibility for sending his minor son. So we're trying to discuss, Rabbosai, what exactly their machlokes is. So the Rabbanan held that ultimately, again, the sending of my minor son was just there to tell the Chenveni that I want product, that I did not mean for the Chenveni to actually send the product with my son. Rabbi Huda said no. Rabbi Huda said that ultimately, again, both the Sha'al Manas Kain Shalcho. Rabbi Huda said ultimately again, and Rabbi Huda patered. Fine. Says the Gemara. Ella Abayi bar Avin Rabbi Chanina bar Avin Dami Rabbi. Hachma Askinon. What's the case here, Bosai? Top of Peches. Kigon Shenotla Lamudba. Bosai, the case over here is where Lemaisa, the Chenveni, took the kli in order to go ahead and measure with it. Now take a look at the top Rashbam. Kigon shenot lo lamad ba kilomar masnisin lav bebalabayis lo bechenveni mocher tzluchis mairi. Ela kigon shenot lo lamad besoch hashemen. Ve'af agav to das hachenveni shalcha yeshema lo yitlena mishenot lo mischai ba kidiraba. But also the keys over here is where the child brought the flask right from home, and the chenveni took it and measured oil. He used it to measure. Ukidi rabba. So we'll say, and this goes in accordance with the position of rabba, dama rabba. So let's say Rabbi says the following case. Without getting into the technicalities of the case, Rabbi essentially says that Rabbi says, if an animal is lost and you cause that animal to move, because you are responsible for the movement of the animal, therefore what? You've taken achrayis ultimately to return it. Otherwise, Rabbi says that if you go ahead and you somehow amplify the lost status of the animal by moving it further from its owner, like in this case where you cause it to actually move, then lamaisa, you have a heightened degree of responsibility for that animal. So too, the Gemara suggests over here the following idea, that ultimately, again, when the chenveni takes hold, literally, of that flask, so again, at that point in time, he assumes a level of responsibility for it, and therefore, were something to happen to it later on, he would be responsible. To which the Gemara says, Emor da'amar rabba babali chayim, da'aktinhu nigra braiso. Kisi, the Gemara says, again, maybe that's only by bali chayim. Maybe that's only by animals that Rabba says. That's why. Because literally, when you go ahead and you cause the animal to move, it is taking steps that distance it from its owner. Therefore, because you are causing the active distancing of the animal from its owner, that's why you're chayiv. Bechiyai gavna mi amar. But would Rabba really go ahead and apply the same principle in this particular case? Ela amarava ani va'arisha bechabura targaminu. Rather, Rava said, both I and the Arisha Bechabur, the strongest member of the Chevra, right, we both interpret it in this way. And who is the Ari of the Chabura? Rabbi Zera. What's the case? Hachama askinan, kegon shenotla lamud ba lachirim. Oh, we'll say here's the case. And here's where it becomes exceptionally fascinating. What's the case over here? I send my son with the flask in order to go ahead and purchase oil from the Chenveni. So we'll say I send them with $20, even though I only need $10 of oil. And what happens? When he gets there, the Chenveni takes the utensil from the hands of my son, but uses that utensil to measure out oil for others. So again, he's now using that utensil, that flask, to measure out oil for others. And we'll say, so what's the machlokes over here? U'bishoel shalomidas kamiflegi. The Machlokas Rabbonan and Rabbi Yehuda centers on the case of Shoel Shalomidas. So we'll say, what happens if you borrow something from someone without their knowledge? What is the status of someone who borrows something from someone without the knowledge of the owner. Mar Savar Shoal Havi will say, so one opinion holds that ultimately somebody who borrows without permission is still called a Shoal. Umar Savar, the other opinion holds, Gazlan Havi. He's a thief. If you borrow without permission, that's called a thief. We'll say, look at the Rashbam for just a moment. The Mar Savar, Rabbanon, Gazlan Havi, the Kanye, the Hischayev, Ba Ad Shetavo Liad Bailim, the Ba'inon, the Heshev Eshagzela, Vashava Liad Atinok, Lav Hashavihi. Supposed to listen to this. So the Rabbanon hold that if you borrow something without the knowledge of the owner, that is an act of theft. That is an act of theft. Therefore, we'll say once it's an act of theft, what's your chiyuv? Your chiyuv is to return the object to the owner. Returning it to the child, after so we'll say. So therefore, in that case, when the chenveni takes it from my son, the chenveni has effectively stolen the flask. The only time he rectifies that misdeed is when? If he gives it back to me. The act of giving it back to my child is not a proper act of hashava, not a proper act of return. Therefore, if it turns out that the flask breaks before it gets back to me, who's chayiv? The chenveni. On the other hand, Rabbi Huda holds, Rabbi Huda Savar Shoal Havi, look at the Rashbam, next Rashbam, V'chi machziru l'makom sheshalo misham dai. The Rashbam holds that when you borrow something without someone's permission, that's called a shoal. And what's the obligation of the shoal? To return the object back to where he found it. Where did he find it, so to speak? He found it in the hands of my son. As long as he returns it back there, then what? He has fulfilled his obligation of Hashava, and he is done. So what the Gemara suggests, ultimately, again, that is the Machlokis. Now, just so you should know, the way we paskin is that a Shoel Shalomidas is a Gaslan. We hold that borrowing without permission, ultimately, again, is tantamount to an act of theft. I will say, now that being said, there are exceptions to that rule, right? What are the famous exceptions to that rule? So what we call Tashmishe Dikdusha, Tfilin. Right? I could use someone's tefillin without asking their permission. I could use someone's talis without asking their permission. Sfarim is a bigger discussion if you could use it without their permission. Today we assume there's implied permission. Why? I both say because in general, when it comes to tefillin, when it comes to talis, we have the concept of nechale initially avid mitzvah b'mamone, that a person is happy for someone else to fulfill a mitzvah with their property. The reason Sfarim sometimes are a little bit different is because there's a certain level of wear and tear. That happens with Sfarim. But again, even today, because we have binding, so we assume that if my sefer is on the table, and for some crazy, ridiculous, unknown reason, I'm not here, right? So then again, I'm happy for someone else to go ahead and use my sefer. Fine, but in all other circumstances, so the mice again, we hold that a shol shalomidas will in fact be a gaz. So Gemara suggests that's the machlokis in the Mishnah between Rabban and Rabbi Yehuda. Gufa, Amar Shmuel, Hanotel Kli, Mina Uman, Levakro. So also remember again, yesterday we had this case, and this was also so much riveting stuff yesterday and today. So we had this case where somebody is in a store, and they lift up a Kli, Hanotel Kli, Mina Uman, Levakro. So can you imagine, I'm in the store, right? I'm in the Uman store. I lift up the Kli to examine it, and what? V'ne'enas biyado, and I break the Kli. I break through, what's the halacha? Chayiv. So we'll say again, this is a very important halacha. This is the, right, so this is, you broke it, you bought it. Right, but this most of it, it's rooted in halacha. That once you pick it up, again, there's a certain almost kinyan that exists over there, and therefore you're going to be chayiv. The hani mili hu dikaitzi damel. I will say that is only true of what? If the price ultimately, again, was set. In other words, we're not talking about items where the price is negotiable. It's talking about a situation where the price is already set. So the Gemara tells a couple of stories with this. Hu gavra da'alabe tivcha, da'alabe tabcha, agba atma de bisra. So also there was an individual who was in a butcher shop. He had lifted up a piece of meat. Bahadita ka agba asa parsha mir mamine. And I will say what happened. As he was holding the piece of meat, a guy on a horse rode by and chopped the piece of meat out of his hand. So the Gemara says, "Asa kmi Rav Yemar." So the customer came before Rav Yemar in order to figure out is he chayav for that or not. So asa kmi Rav Yemar chayve l'shalume dame, and Rav Yemar required that the customer go ahead and pay for the piece of meat. So we'll say there's an assumption almost over here that if the price is fixed and you have picked up the utensil, that lamaisa, there's an implied understanding that you are about to purchase it. And therefore, to a certain degree, there's almost like a quasi-kinyan on this, which is actually quite amazing. Hahu gavra da'isi kare lepum nara. Let's listen to this case. First of all, line pechesam adalif. There was a man who came to Pumnara. Pumnara is a place. So what happens? Asukuli Ama Shakul Kra. So we'll say he bought gourds to sell by Pumnara. So the gourds were very popular. Everybody's running to purchase gourds. He'll say there was only one problem. So the Gemara says, Amaluhu, Harihein Mukdash Hashanah. What was the problem? Everybody was grabbing the gourds, and the merchant got overwhelmed because he did not know who was taking what. And he got nervous that people were just stealing. So he cries out, all of the gourds are Hekdish. Listen, of course, this doesn't really help his cause very much. But it's a very good musr. That sometimes when people are flustered, right? Sometimes this is why it's a good idea not to speak when you're too overwhelmed. Because the mice end up saying things that could be nonsensical and worse, could even be detrimental. But nevertheless, he calls out, they're all Hekdish. So I was looking at Rav Kahana. So they came up for Rav Kahana and said, what's the status of the Hekdish? Amar Lahu, Ein Adam Makdish Davar Sheino Shila. Well, that's a very profound statement. So Rav Kahana said, the Hekdish status is ineffective. Why? Because a person cannot consecrate something that is not theirs. Which I will say is another dramatic way of saying that the owner of the gourds didn't really own the gourds. Why I will say? Because again, the assumption is the prices were set. When the customers picked them up, the intention was to buy. There's almost already like a quasi-kinyan. Obviously, they have to pay. But lamaisa, again, to a certain degree, that object is no longer considered fully in the reshus of the seller. And therefore, again, he has no right to be makdish it. So the Gemara says, that's only true if the price was set. But if the price was not fully set, then birshus maraihu kaimi v'shapir akdish. We'll say if the price was not set, then there could be no quasi-kinyan that has taken place, and therefore lemaisa what? The hekdish designation would work. Next, tanabalam. Halokeach yark min ashuk. Suppose listen to this case. This case is a little bit different. Somebody goes ahead and purchases vegetables in the shuk. And what happened? Ubirer v'heniach. So I'll say what he's doing over here is he's picking out good vegetables and he's putting them on the side. Now, if you look at the Rashbam, birer v'heniach means below gamar liknos, meaning he didn't. See, we'll say the Gemara is making a distinction now between someone who picks up an object and holds it, in which case we assume that lemaisa when he holds it and the price is set, there's almost like a gemar das that a person has in mind to buy it. In which case, a quasi-kinyan has been affected. But I will say, versus someone who's, let's say, going through stuff, putting stuff aside. But it's understood that what? Right? That ultimately, again, he's going to decide on some of it. Right? Lav dafka, that the person is going to purchase all of it. Right? So again, a purchaser, we're walking around, I put a bunch of stuff on the side. I'm not going to purchase all of it, but I want to set aside the stuff that at least is in the running. So I'll say, what's the halacha? Afilu kol yom kulo, lo kana, lo neschayi b'meiser. Therefore, I will say, as long as I'm putting it on the side, and I will say, I just want to point out, these halachos obviously are also very much, I'll call it societally or marketplace driven. In other words, this is how they operated in commerce. It was understood that if an item had a specific price tag, and assuming it was non-negotiable, and you picked it up, right, it was clear that your intention, and you held it, not just picked up to look at it and put it back down, but you were holding it, the lemais, again, that was demonstrative of your desire ultimately to buy it. However, again, if you're just putting stuff on the side, then lemais, you're going to buy something of this group, but lav dafka, that you've made a decision on what. So what's that look? Therefore, you've not been kona, so to speak. Now, the lashon of lo kana rabosa means, I have not forged any type of relationship with this object. Furthermore, again, v'lo neschayev emeiser. And the produce is not yet chayiv in meiser. Now, what the Rashbam is pointing out over here is that this is the case of someone who's purchasing produce from an amaretz. Now, the assumption is when you produce of an amaretz is called demai, because we do not know the status of the produce. We don't know for sure that an amaretz doesn't tithe. The statistical probability is that he does not. And therefore, when I purchase produce from an amaretz, I have to retithe. So the Gemara is saying over here is, if I'm just putting stuff on the side, I have not been kona it. And because I have not been kona it, I am not chayiv to tithe it. Gamar b'libo l'knoso, kanavin is chayiv b'meiser. So we'll say, but once I've decided, right, in my heart that I'm going to purchase this produce, either all the stuff that's set aside or some of the stuff that's set aside, I have acquired it. and it's chayiv in meiser. To which the Gemara says, well, here's the problem. Let's say then Rabbo say, I decide against it. Now, when we say that I've acquired the object, so we'll say, let's say, okay, I'm holding the object, I decide I'm going to buy it, and then I have very quick buyer's remorse. I decide, you know what? I don't want to buy it. So what does it mean? I can't return it? So of course, in a normal case, forget about produce just a moment. I pick up a flask. Right? So now what we're saying is, the price is set, I pick it up, I decide I'm going to buy it, I forged a relationship with that object. Let's say now I decide I don't want to buy it. I'm still standing in the store. What's the halacha? Put it back down and walk out. And I'm done. The produce, or else Gemara suggests, poses a little bit of a different problem. Because once I've decided to buy it, it's become chayiv in meiser. So to return it, quote unquote, iefsher, shakvarn is chayiv in meiser. Ula asro iefsher. Rabbi said, to tithe it, I can't do. Why? Because to tithe it and return it, the owner is not going to be very happy with me. Shekvar mafchisan bedamim. How could I tithe produce and then return it back ultimately to the owner? So what should I do? Haketzad ma'asro v'nosin lo d'mei meiser. So what I have to do is tithe the fruit and give now the missing value back to the owner. So I tithe it and give the missing value back to the owner. Tushin Rav says, what are you talking about? Mishum digamar belibo liknos kana v'nischayiv b'meiser. What are you talking about? So because I had in mind to buy something, I'm in the produce store. I mean, right, Amma Aretz is fresh produce, right? It's a big sign, but it's easy to remember. Right, Amma Aretz is fresh produce. So because I'm in Amma Aretz's store, and I decide that I'm going to buy produce, the act of deciding to buy produce, I haven't given any money, I haven't done anything, but so he's going to be chayiv to tithe the produce, even though I'm not going to own it. Meaning, remember, at the end of the day, I'm not even taking this home. I've decided against the purchase. But I'm chayiv to tithe it because I'm gamar belibo, to which the Gemara says, you're right. This is not a normal case. Amar Rabosh Yahacha, biyare shamayim askinon. Rabosh, we're talking about someone who is a yare shamayim. Rabosh, when the Gemara uses the lashon of a yare shamayim, what this ultimately refers to is someone who conducts all of his affairs just on a different level. On a we'll call it, you know, uber lechatchila level, that ultimately, again, above and beyond any normative expectations. Kigon Rav Safra. We'll say the Gemara gives like an example, ultimately, again, of Rav Safra. So the Gemara says, "Dikayim benafshei v'dover ms v'levavo." Because Rav Safra was the kind of person, Rabbi Say, who upheld with himself the Dover Ms Bilvavo, who speaks the truth in his heart. Which Rabbi Say is another way of saying that ultimately, again, if he had in mind something in his heart, even though he did not verbally, even if he did not articulate it, ultimately, again, he would hold himself to the feelings he had in his heart. Look at the Rashman for just a moment. Rav Safra, Havakari Kriyashma, Va'amali Ahu Gavra, Havli Iskach Bekach Bekach Ma'o. So Rabbi Say, Gemara tells a famous Maisa. Rav Safra was davening Kriyat Shema, and a man came over to him and wanted to do business with him, wanted to buy merchandise from him. And the man offered him a certain amount of money. So listen to this, an amazing Maisa. Rav Safra is davening Kriyat Shema, a man comes over to him and says, I want to purchase your cow, whatever, the, what I don't remember the object was. I want to purchase your cow. I'll give you $1,000. Rav Safra was silent. Now, why was he silent? What was it? He's in the Kriya Shema. So the buyer understood his silence as like a shtach. I'm not even going to answer you for $1,000. He says, fine, $1,500. Safra's still not answering. The price goes to an exorbitant amount of money. After Kriya Shema, Rav Safra says, no, I was willing to sell to you for the $1,000. I just didn't answer you because I was in the middle of Shana. Now, again, on a technical Choshen Mishpat level, what would Rav Safra been entitled to? The full amount. Absolutely. Again, remember, the guy's bidding against himself. That's his problem. That's not my problem. But yet, again, because Rav Safra in his heart had already decided that the initial offer was a good one, that was the one he bound himself to. Therefore, says the Gemara, "V'hachinami gabi meiser kevan diyorei shemayimu kevan shikar belibo zacha b'mekaf and eschayiv b'mecher kimach zero kechozra mochel odami." Therefore, Rabbi said, so to someone like Rav Safra, when they had in mind in their heart to purchase the produce, ultimately, again, it would be subject to tithes. But Rabbi said, so this is not what we'll call a halachic obligation. This is what we'll call a yorei shemayim obligation. Incredible, says the Mishnah. Hasiton mekanech midosav echal l'shloshim yom. Both say a wholesaler has to clean his weights has to clean his weights, ultimately, again, once every 30 days. Once every 30 days. So it says the Gemara. Now again, really what this is talking about over here is his scales. That's really the better way to say it. The scales or his measures. The idea being that if he's dealing with a lot of produce, over time we'll say what could happen? Some stuff could get the buildup. Now we'll say now the buildup is problematic. Why? Because then it turns out over time if there's enough buildup, you're not really giving your customers the full measure of what it is that they are purchasing. Therefore, he has to clean his measures every 30 days. A balabas is someone who sells stuff, but it's not lavdavka, his occupation. But nevertheless, he has scales as well. He's got to clean them out once every 12 months. The assumption is because he's not conducting as much commerce, therefore what? There's not as much buildup. Rav Shimon Gamliel omer chilaf advarim. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, no, it's just the opposite. The seton, the wholesaler, is always selling, so the stuff is always moving off his scales. And therefore, there's much less of a possibility for buildup because he's regularly cleaning anyway. The balabas, who does more infrequent business than what he has to clean more often. A chenveni should go ahead, and therefore, Rav Shimon says, a chenveni should go ahead and clean his measures twice a week. And he should wipe down his weights once every week. And he should wipe down his scale every single time he measures out produce. When is this so? Meaning, we'll say everything we've stated until now. Here's the bottom line. The bottom line is, you're obligated with some level of frequency to clean off your weights, your scales, and your measures. The idea being we're concerned about buildup, and again, concerned that you're going to inadvertently defraud the purchaser. Says the Mishnah, when is this true? He says, when is this true? When is this true? Belach. Both said, this is really only true when you're dealing with liquids. Aval yovesh b'yovesh eino tzarech. Rabbi say for dry items, what is the Gemara saying? The concern with buildup, Rabbi say, is by what? The concern with buildup is by liquids. Because liquids sometimes could get caked on. Dry measure, on the other hand, usually comes right off the scales or right off the measures when you remove the product. I'm with base. Pechayiv lahachriya lo tafach. Rabbi say, this is really interesting. And this gets into a lot of the hashkafa of Jewish business. You know, we'll say there's like the choshen mishpat of doing business, and then there's the hashkafa of doing business. Chayev la'achriyah lo tefach means, we'll say, that when you sell someone product, you are obligated to weigh the scale down, a tefach, in the benefit of the purchaser. What the Mishnah is saying over here is that when you are measuring out produce for the purchaser, you are always obligated to tilt the scale in the favor of the purchaser. Now, what the Gemara is saying over here is chayv la'achriya lo tefach. Ultimately, again, means you're chayv literally to weigh the scale down a tefach in his favor. Now, we'll discuss exactly what that means, how much that measurement is. But lamaisa, what it means is you're obligated to tilt the scale in the benefit or for the benefit of the purchaser. So the Gemara says chayv la'achriya lo tefach hayir shokel lo ayin ba'ayin. We'll say, however, again, if you're weighing it out, and literally, again, the scale was exactly equal. Ayin, ayin means, you know, both sides of the scale are at eye level. No same lo girumin. So you go ahead and you give him girumin. Now, we'll say girumin, we're going to see, means extra. What does extra mean? Echol la'asara belach. So we'll say, it sounds like 1/10 extra in a liquid measure, though we're going to see it's not actually that much. Ve'echol la'esrim biyavish. And 1/20 when it comes to a dry measure. So both said, this is talking about the amounts of extra that a seller is obligated to give to the purchaser. Makom shenagu lamod bedaka lo yamod begasa. Begasa lo yamod bedaka. So both said, in a place where the custom is to use a small measuring utensil, you should not use a large one. Where the custom is to use a large measuring utensil, you should not use a small one. Both said, the idea being that whatever type of measuring utensil you use, when a person is buying a lot of produce, sometimes it can have a positive benefit, sometimes it can have a negative benefit. What the Mishnah is just saying is, whatever the local minhag medina is, that's what you need to stick to. Limchok lo yigdosh, if where you live, when they measure out produce, they normally go ahead and flatten out the produce, the pile of produce, then you should not make a pile. But a place where the custom is to pile on the produce, you should not smooth it out. So we'll say, so what the Mishnah is essentially teaching me is three core lessons. Number one, be careful to make sure that there's no buildup on your weights, measures, and scales. That is only true with liquids, but by solids, apparently, we're a little bit less concerned. The seller is always obligated to tilt the measure in the favor of the purchaser. And lesson number three, whatever types of measuring utensils are commonly used within the marketplace in which you are operating need to be the types of utensils that you use as well. Fine, says the Gemara.
Amen.
Says the Gemara. Minhani Mili. We'll say, how do we know this? Look at the Rashbam. Minhani Mili. So we'll say, the Mishnah said a very dramatic statement that when you are measuring out the scales, so you should go ahead, when you're measuring out the scales, you should tilt the scale a tefach in the favor of the purchaser. Where do we know that from? Well, because again, if you think about it, lav dafka, that's good business. It's very nice. It's very beautiful. But from where do I know that there's a mandate to do that? Says the Gemara, Amrei Shlakish Damakra, Evan Shlema Vitzadek. I both say the pasuk when it talks about the obligation to have complete weights and measures says you should have an even shleima, meaning you should have a complete weight of the tzedek. So we'll say that word tzedek is extra, right? I don't need that word tzedek. Just tell me even shleima. Why the tzedek? So the Gemara says tzedek mishalcha v'tein lo. It means be righteous from your own and give to your fellow. The Torah is telling me, we'll say two mandates. Mandate number one is be honest. Mandate number two is be generous. But say, if you think about it, by the way, it's an incredible yisod in Jewish business ethics. Because what is the Mishnah ultimately saying about saying? See, people often think that if I go ahead and I give any more than what the buyer is entitled to, I'm taking a loss. So we'll say, to which we understand, that the person has to understand, my parnasa is dependent on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, dependent on the Ribono Shel Olam. If I am generous with another Jew, there is no way that the Ribono Shel Olam is going to make me suffer as a result of that. Therefore, Evan Shlema, ultimately I have to be honest, Vitzedek. Tzedek means Sadek Mishalcha V'Teimlo. Be generous. Because ultimately, again, honesty, Rabbi Osai, ultimately means, see, when a person cheats, when a person feels they have to cheat in business, what they're really saying is, I'm in control of my bottom line, not the Ribono Shel Olam. So honesty shows that the Ribono Shel Olam ultimately is in charge. The generosity shows my true belief that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge. Because I will say, again, being generous, it kind of goes against my business acumen. But l'maisa, when I'm generous, that shows even more that I believe the Ribono Shel Olam is a tzaddik, mishalcha v'tein lo. Ihachi, if that's the case, Eva say, what about the end of the Mishnah? Shokelo ayin ba'ayin, no sin lo girumin. So let's remember, the end of the Mishnah was very strange. The Mishnah said that if I'm weighing out the scales equally, ayin ba'ayin, Rabbi Osei, is an expression like when you see eye to eye, so that's like a level. If the scales are ayin ba'ayin, means they're exactly equal. So if I say that the scales are ayin ba'ayin, no sin lo girumin, the halacha is I have to give this purchaser a little bit extra. I don't understand. If you just told me that giving extra measures of Osai is what? Is it din d'oraisa? So how am I ever measuring out ayin ba'ayin? El reisha b'makom shenagu. Now the Rabbi Osai, what the reisha is talking about again, in the case of shokel lo tefach, or lachriya lo tefach, it's talking about that's the minagamakom. The minagamakom, Rabbi Osai, in that place is where the seller used to tilt the scale a tefach in the favor, ultimately, of the purchaser. V'chi itmar d'Reish Lakish, on Reish Lakish's comment, of tse'even shleima v'tzedek, tzodek mishalcha v'tein lo, aseifa itmar. So we'll say, the Mishnah, what the Gemara essentially is answering is, Reish Lakish's statement, we'll say, is a general statement, which is, that when going ahead and selling someone produce, so we'll say, the seller has to make sure to tilt the scale in the favor of the purchaser. And we'll say, that is a din d'Reish, according to Reish Lakish. Even shleima, be generous, vitzadek. Tzadek means vitzadek mishalcha v'tein lo. Be righteous from your own produce and give to your fellow. The first part of the Mishnah was which was said v'chayev lachriya lo tefach was reflecting a certain norm they had in their marketplace. That's not the halacha necessarily, but rather again that was the minhag hamakom that the Mishnah is discussing. So itmar v'chi ibar aseifa itmar. Fine. Fine. So we'll say, so that's how we're understanding it. The first part of the Mishnah, which speaks of Chaylach Rilo Tefach, was a Minag HaMakom. Then the Mishnah said, if the scales are equal, make sure to tilt them in the favor of the purchaser. Where do we get that from? The Limud, the teaching of Reish Lakish. V'kame Girumin. Now, we'll say, now here's what's interesting. So in the second part of the Mishnah taught me that I have to tilt the scales in the favor of the purchaser. So the Mishnah said, you have to tilt it, Nosein Lo Girumin. How much is Girumin? So ultimately, the Rav Aram Marmel says it's 1/100th. 1/100th. So Rav says the basic obligation I had in terms of giving the purchaser extra produce is 1/100th of the amount that I'm selling him. Which I will say again is certainly, again, I guess it depends on the commodity that you're selling, but by no means is an incredibly large amount. 1/100th is what I'm obligated to add on. So the Gemara asks the following. So the Gemara asks the Akasha. So, what exactly is the Mishnah saying? Echad me'asara belach la'asara delach ve'echad me'esrim b'yavesh la'esrim d'yavesh. So I will say ultimately again, is the Mishnah teaching me that the extra amount I have to give is 1/10th of the litra when there are 10 litros being sold, and so to 1/20th of the litra when there are 20 litros being sold? O Dilma, echad me'asara la'asara delach ula esrim diyavesh. Or ultimately, again, does it mean 1/10th? Does it mean O Dilma, echad me'asara la'asara delach, 1/10th of the 1/10th of the liquid measure, and which would also be 1/10th of the 1/20th of the dry measure? So the Gemara is trying to figure out ultimately, again, what are these measurements? To which the Gemara says, teiku. We don't know. So we'll say, so bottom line, what do you do with a teiku in this case? What you do with the teiku in this case is the following. Is that halacha l'maisa? What does the Mishnah teach you about say? What is that halacha? You have to give extra. Right? Now, again, what is clear also is that it's not an exceptionally large amount. Unless, of course, by the way, it is. Because, for example, the Mishnah's first case, because you always remember, again, remember the Mishnah quoted a minog of chayef la'achriya lo tefach. Now, I will say, if you think about that, by the way, tefach is how much? Right? Tefach is that. So, we'll say, if you think about it, by the way, depending on what it is that you're selling, if I'm chayef to tilt the scale an extra tefach in the favor of the purchaser, that could be quite significant. Now, it seems to me the Mishnah is quoting that by way of illustration. But lemaise, again, that's not the halacha. The halacha Rabbi says is as Reish Lakish said it, which is, Eifa Shlem, we have to be honest, and after honesty comes Sadek. How do we interpret Sadek? Sadek Mishelcha Vitein Lo. Be righteous of your own and give to your fellow. How much? See, here's what we know. We're not exactly sure how to interpret the 1/10th and the 1/20th of the Mishnah. The 1/10th by liquid measures, the 1/20th by dry measures. We're not sure. So what it means for us, Rabbi Osei, is give a little bit extra. Now, bepashtos, that little bit, we would assume, was probably governed by a marketplace norm. There's an institutionalized generosity in any type of transaction. How much that actually is would probably be dependent on the minhag hamakom. Fine. The Gemara goes weiter. So the Gemara says the following. Amar Rabbi Levi. We'll say now we're going to get into a little bit of mussar about honest business dealings. Amar Rabbi Levi. Kasha onshin shal midos, yosar me onshin shal arayos. So we'll say this is a very dramatic statement. Rabbi Levi says, the punishment, Rabbi Osai, for ultimately midos. Midos means having incorrect measures, which is another way of saying the punishment, Rabbi Osai, for being dishonest in business is worse than the punishment for immorality. Very strong statement. Shezen ne'emar bahen al, or I should say el, v'zen ne'emar bahen eila. So we'll say, so listen to this. By Arayos, the pasuk says, ki es kol ha'toivos ha'el osu anshe aretz. Now, again, el also means these, but it's written shorthand. As opposed to Rabbi Osei, when it comes to the punishment, ultimately, by ki toavos Hashem alakecha kol osa eila. So it's almost like when it writes these by Arayos, it writes it shorthand as L. When it writes these by dishonest business dealings, ultimately, again, it writes it longhand as Eila. So the Gemara understands the writing of it longhand Eila is representative of the fact that the punishment that is a result ultimately of corrupt business dealings is even worse than the punishments associated with Arayos. So the Gemara says, "My mashma, the high El Kashu." So I say, how do you know ultimately again that the Lashon of El is a Lashon Kasha? Techsiv ves Eili ha'aretz lakach. Gabi Arayos nami haksiv Eila. But one second, it also says the word Eila by Arayos, to which the Gemara says, Ahu lemi'ute midos mikares. Shabbos say, the Eila as it comes by Arayos, Shabbos say, is to come to what? Is to come ultimately again to try to exclude, ultimately again, to exclude mitos, to exclude corrupt business dealings from kares. Shabbos say, what the Gemara is saying is the following. As much as we're saying that lemaisa, being dishonest in business is worse than Arayos, that we're going to see that is true perhaps on a hashkafic level. We'll discuss why that is. But Lamaisa, again, on a punishment level, so certain Arayos carry with them the penalty of Kares, which Rabbi say, of course, being dishonest in business does not carry. So I will say, so why is it that being dishonest in business is even worse than Arayos? But this is what the Gemara says, the Hassam Efshar B'tshuva. Because Rabbi say, at the end of the day, if a person is immoral, they could do tshuva. I could do tshuva ultimately again for being immoral. V'hacha lo efshar b'tshuva. It will say it's very difficult to do tshuva for being dishonest in business. Take a look at the Rashbam. The Rashbam says efshar li b'tshuva, arayos mo'alas tshuva. So by arayos, ultimately again, so tshuva works. I'avi li tshuva ma'aliyase kedichsev shuvu banim shovim erpo m'shuvasam. Va'amri nami kochai v'kriso shalaku nafku nifteru midei krisas. Rabbi says, even if I commit the most horrible act of immorality, I have the ability to go out and do tshuva for that act. Ava midos shagazal es harabim i'af shalo b'tshuva shari tshuvaso teluya b'hashava gzela b'hashava gzela b'hashava gzela b'hashava gzela v'hu in yodeh l'mi yachzir. So I'll say, here's the issue. The issue over here is, if I have been dishonest in business, I've been a dishonest merchant. So I'll say, I kept weighted measures, right? So I'll say, so what's happened? Over the years, I've cheated many people. So even if I want to do tshuva, what's the problem? What's the problem? How could I atone? Right? We'll say, the halacha is, if I've stolen from people, I have an obligation to give back that which I have stolen. That's fine if I know what I've stolen or who I've stolen from. If a person's been dishonest in their businesses, but pashtos, I've been dishonest with so many people that even if I want to try to right the wrongs, I don't know how to do it. Now, interestingly enough, fa'afagav daminon, yaseh bo'en sarchi rabin, ein zu tshuva ma'alyo, ma'achshim shol. So we'll say, there is a remedy. The Gemara brings down that if a person stole money, or a person was dishonest, and I don't know who to return the money to, so what do you do with that money? Dedicate it for the needs of the community. Now again, I want to be clear, right? This is very often misunderstood. This does not mean that you could be dishonest as long as you're generous to the community, right? But what it means is, if a person ultimately, again, was dishonest, wants to do tshuva, so I have this money that I know is ill-gotten gains, I can't give it back to the people who I wronged because I don't know who I wronged. So again, what I can do is use that money for some good. Use that money for some good. But even Ashman points out to both sides, that doesn't really affect tshuva. It doesn't affect complete tshuva. It affects partial tshuva. It's certainly better than living in an act of sin, but it's not complete tshuva. Therefore, I will say, because of that, the Gemara says that even being dishonest in business is even worse than Arayos, because at least for Arayos, I can do tshuva. At least for Arayos, I can do tshuva. But Lamais, again, ultimately for negative weights and measures, ultimately, you know, I don't have the ability to do true tshuva. So we'll stop over here. We'll pick up Emirat Hashem with Amar Rebbe Levi. Absolutely.